Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Houston, earned a BS in Marketing Public Relations from the University of North Texas. From 1989 to 1994, he was the Vice President of Sponsorships and Promotions for the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? And from 94 to 2012, he was the co-founder of Genesco Sports Enterprises. Since 2012, he's been the Executive Director of Heritage Works. A quintessential marketer, salesman, and entrepreneur, his name, Charlie Toronto. And we're honored to have him as a guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Charlie Toronto, the Executive Director of Heritage Works. Charlie, let's go back. Your childhood in Texas and your mom and your dad, please.
Sure. I was fortunate to be named after my father. I'm Charles Toronto, Jr. My dad, Charles Toronto, Sr., was a wonderful example. The son of immigrant Italian-Americans that came over from Sicily, came in through the port of New Orleans, and then migrated over to Houston, Texas. My mom, Joanne, was his high school sweetheart, and together they really provided us with a wonderful example of how to be a mom and a dad. So married 63 years. My father passed 5 years ago. We were a very close-knit family. It was my mom and my dad, very hard workers, three sisters, and I'm the middle child, but in an Italian-American family, the only son is a meaningful position to have among your siblings.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Well, I learned that, you know, in our family, the dad was the head of the family, but my mom was the heart of the family. So when it came time to get the family together, to resolve any sibling issues, to make big decisions, it was always the heart of the family that made that decision. And my mom was a wonderful example. Growing up, she was always there for us. My dad the same way. I think with my dad, I learned that you can work hard, but you can be kind. And he was a very hard worker, and I went to work with him almost every day from 6 to 16. And he really did teach me how to be nice to people, and there's no excuse for not being the nicest person in the room. He would always tell me, he says, Charlie, you may never be the smartest person in the room, but you can always work to be the nicest person in the room. And through that, how you treat people is really your mark, more so than anything you accomplish business-wise. So I took, you know, my parents' advice from day one, and just absolutely wonderful parents. I couldn't have been blessed with better parents and the better examples.
We're talking to Charlie Toronto. Charlie, from 1983 to 86, you were a sportscaster / promotions director for KPLX and KLIF Radio. Talk about that chapter of your life.
It was wonderful. So I went to the University of North Texas for the sole purpose to be positioned near Dallas. So being a big Cowboy fan, and really, you know, Dallas was a destination back in the 80s. So I wanted to go to Dallas, and you know, I basically walked into a radio station one day and asked them, I'm like, I'd like to be a sports reporter here. You don't have to pay me. I'll do it for free if you allow me the opportunity to get a press credential and learn the business. And they were glad to do so. And I was a sports reporter for 3 years. I helped work my way through college at the University of North Texas, was reporting on Rangers, Texas Rangers, Dallas Mavericks, Dallas Cowboys football games, where I would do the interviews after the game. And since I was the second reporter, the first reporter got to go do the winning team interviews, and I was tasked with doing the losing team interviews. If you can imagine, Jack, every single game, walking into the losing locker room and having to, why did you lose, interview with the players. But they found out later that that was my job, and they really were sweet to me about I know you got it. He goes, I hope I don't see you next game, because they knew that if they did, that meant they lost the game. But it was a great experience, and I love my career in radio.
Great story. Lou Holtz, first head coaching job was William and Mary. William and Mary. He was 0-10, and he loses the last game 45-0. So the reporters come in, coach, can you tell us in three or four paragraphs what was wrong with your squad? He says, I can tell you in one sentence. We had too many Marys and not enough Williams.
Oh, I love Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz's son worked with me at the Dallas Cowboys.
Huh.
So, he was in our legal department, yeah. Lou Holtz, what a great man, what a great perspective he had on life. Yeah. And anyone that met Lou, you know, never forgot their meeting with Lou. He had that kind of impression on you. But and what a wit, you know, to have that and to package all that wisdom in a witty way was just a gift.
Okay, we're talking to Charlie Toronto. When we come back, we're going to talk about his chapter with the Dallas Cowboys. He joined them in 1989. They had the worst record in the NFL, 1-15. When we come back, we're going to ask about that year in the life of Charlie Toronto. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Charlie Toronto. From 1989 to 1984, he was the vice president of sponsorships and promotions for the Dallas Cowboys. So, Charlie, you get there, you go 1-15. Talk about that season, and what was it like trying to sell sponsorships when you were 1-15?
So I had come over from an indoor soccer team called the Dallas Sidekicks. So when Jerry gets to town, someone had mentioned, one of my friends, I believe it was Bill Spicer, Dr. Pepper, said, you know, if you're going to hire someone, there's a young guy named Charlie that everybody seems to like, and he's very forthright with us, so you should hire him. So I get hired at the Dallas Cowboys. They're 1-15. They had just fired Tom Landry, who was a revered figure in Dallas for 29 years as their head coach. So the first time I met with Jerry, he's like, well, what's your approach going to be? I'm like, well, I'm going to lead with positivity. I'm going to tell people that if they sponsor us, they're getting in, you know, at a very affordable rate for what is going to be a Super Bowl team. And they may laugh, but we're going to stick with it. That's our story, and we're going to stick with it. So everyone we went to, we said, you know what, you're coming in on a 1-15 team. We're not going to get any worse. We hope not, but we don't think we're getting any worse than 1-15.
Charlie, us Lions were once 0-16, remember?
Right, you did. The only team I know that was worse than the 1-15, Cowboys. So we leaned into positivity, and we said, if you get in the ground floor now, we won't forget you when we get great. And to his credit, Mr. Jones, when we went to the Super Bowl a few years later, he was like, everybody that's been with us, they're getting Super Bowl tickets. They want to get down on the field. You know, you couldn't. We had so many sponsors flooding the gates. He goes, let's be loyal to the ones that were with us, 1-15 and 3-13. He goes, those are our partners. You find out who your friends are when times are tough. And so I learned a lot in that very, very innovative environment around the Dallas Cowboys. And Jerry really led the way. He was a very inspirational guy. And Jimmy was a great coach, and together it was easy to believe in those two people. And you know, fortunately, we had wonderful young players like Emmett Smith and Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin and Jay Novacek, wonderful players who were committed to winning. So we had a great environment. And back then, Jack, there were only like 16 or 17 people in the front office. They might have 16 or 17 people in PR now. You know, so everybody got to do a lot. You know, I also did all the trade advertising and game production. So everybody wore five or six hats. And it was a great place to learn how to be in the sports environment and work in a front office. And winning is fun. And, you know, the Detroit Lions are learning all about that right now. They're having, you know, one of their best seasons ever, and our favorite probably to go to the Super Bowl.
All right. In 1990, you were 11-5. 1991, Cowboys 11-5, and then 92, 13-3, you win the Super Bowl. 93, 12-4, you won the Super Bowl again. Talk about those 2 years of Super Bowl championships.
Well, you mentioned earlier, like, what was your approach? So even when we were 3-13, I suggested to Jerry, I'm like, let's go to the city of Dallas and build a parade route for the Super Bowl. And everybody in the meeting was laughing. I'm like, let's go in there and be serious. Let's not laugh about it. Let's be prepared for the Super Bowl. So we went to the city. The city didn't know what to think of us. Like, you know, we're not really worried about a Super Bowl parade here. But we went through the planning. We got it done. And lo and behold, we used it later that year. It was phenomenal. You know, the city of Dallas felt really confident about itself. You know, a winning team does help the economy of a city. And a lot of people will tell you, even Jerry or other owners have mentioned, I may technically own the team, but the team belongs to the community. And we have the responsibility to represent the community on and off the field in a way that makes them proud, because it's really the community that owns the team, and they're the ones that are going to benefit when we win. And Dallas certainly did that. They were remarkable wins. And, you know, we were playing the San Francisco 49ers, and, you know, the Buffalo Bills were really good. So it was a great time to be in Dallas and a great time to be at the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay, you say that they were owned by the community, but you sold them as we're America's team. How did you do that?
Well, that was done way prior. So when Tex Shrambaugh was part of the team in the 60s and 70s, that was really their moniker. And I had heard, this may have to be fact-checked, but NFL Films was doing a season-like documentary on every team. And they went to the Pittsburgh Steelers after they won the 76 Super Bowl and said, we have this thing called America's Team. We want to offer it to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Mr. Rooney, a very humble man, was like, I think that's a little bit pretentious for us. So it's not the best for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So they said, well, the other team that everybody really loves is the Dallas Cowboys. So they offered that up sort of to Tex Schramm and the Dallas Cowboys. And, of course, they jumped all over it. And it really kind of took on a life of its own. And they had a star on their helmet. You know, Roger Staubach was a Naval Academy grad. So he was Captain America. There were some dramatic finishes. So they started that label with the Dallas Cowboys, and it stuck back in the 70s. And it was part of the team's history that they have kept, you know, even leveraging to this day.
Okay. Jerry Jones, bigger than life. What's the biggest thing he taught you, Charlie?
In sales, I remember we were in a meeting with a company. And he's like, how much is this deal worth? I'm like, it may be worth, you know, $600,000 a year. He's like, sometimes you just got to ask for $1 million and don't blink. But when we went to the meeting, we'd done the presentation. You know, the executives from the corporation were like, I love what you're saying. This sounds good. We're behind what you're doing. What's the price tag on it? And so that was my cue to say $1 million and don't blink. So I said $1 million. I didn't blink. And the silence just stood in the room for about 4 or 5 seconds. And the executive says, well, if that's what it is, that's what it is. We're paying it. So sometimes you have to think higher of yourself than you actually believe. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, he taught me many things. He was a great teacher and mentor and supporter, even later in my career. But he was someone that in business I really looked up to.
All right, one more Dallas Cowboy question. His sure. head coach was Jimmy Johnson. They played together in college at, I think, Arkansas. But mm-hmm. Jimmy Johnson, his hair, it was never out of place.
Well,
what was the secret sauce?
Well, it may have been secret sauce for sure that kept it in place. But some people are perfectionists, and they're obsessed with perfection. I think the hair that Jimmy Johnson, you know, kept so perfectly coiffed on his head was really a symbol of how he wanted things run, you know, as an organization, as a leader. And I don't know if you recall it or not, but after one of the Super Bowls, they're on the sidelines, they're pouring Gatorade on him, and Emmett Smith kind of hugged him and, messed up his hair. You know, that was the big thing. It's like, we're going to get to mess up Jimmy's hair. But I think it was just, you know, his precise attitude about the way he liked things, how he wanted to, you know, perform, so to speak. So that was what it was. He was famous for it. And but I think that was just a microcosm of how much, you know, perfection he expected. And he even expected out of his own hair. So good for Jimmy. I love Jimmy.
We're talking to Charlie Toronto. When we come back, we'll ask him about co-founding, along with John Tatum, Genesco Sports Enterprises in 1994. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Charlie Toronto. From 1994 to 2012, he was co-founder of Genesco Sports Enterprises, one of the first kind of sports marketing companies in America. Talk about that chapter.
Well, let's talk about the beginning of it first. I had an idea, and I met a gentleman named John Tatum. We thought we'd start our own sports marketing company because I had worked for the Cowboys, and John had worked for Dan Marino. So we knew the other side of the table, so to speak, and we could bring that to corporations. We decided to start the company on an airplane ride over to one of the Super Bowls. And my wife met me there. So when Debbie, my wife, who I've been married to 40 years now, landed, she's like, Charlie, I've got some great news. I'm like, we've got some great news too. So you first. I'm like, hey, John and I have decided we're going to start this company. Our own sports marketing company. And she's like, that's great news. We're going to start a family. But we started a company and found out my wife was pregnant on the very same day, same afternoon. So John, sweet, sweet, wonderful guy. John's like, Charlie, you can't do this. You got to think about insurance. You got to think about, you know, starting your own company with a pregnant wife, how about risky that is. And I remember the conversation. I was like, John, I've always had a dream of starting my own sports marketing company. And I just thought the dream should last more than one day. That sometimes, you know, God puts things in front of you because they're tough, because he knows you're tough enough to handle them. And tough times don't last, but tough people do. We can make it through our first challenge. So lo and behold, you know, he's like, I'm not sure. And I'm like, I'm very sure. So the tiebreaker is my wife. And so Debbie looked over and said, guys, I think you're going to be great. And those are the words that really have stayed with me the rest of my life. You know, someone having confidence in you. And so we did go out on our own. We got an endorsement from Jerry Jones, who did a video for us. And we started talking to people, and we landed very big clients. We had Pepsi and MasterCard and Motorola and Coors that trusted us with a sports sort of a platform or initiative, you know, to formalize their sports sponsorships. And we were one of the first of maybe five or six sports marketing companies back in 1994. And many, many of those relations have remained to this day.
We're talking to Charlie Toronto, a quintessential marketer, salesman, entrepreneur. If you want to learn more, www.heritageworks, but WERKS.com. All right. Sports marketing, I would contend the father of it was the king, Arnold Palmer. Talk about the role he played in all of the stuff that we see with all these athletes now.
Well, so Arnold Palmer, you're exactly right, and Mark McCormick.
Yes.
His friendship with Mark McCormick, IMG, was really the founding of sports marketing, where an athlete's rights could be leveraged and their popularity could be leveraged off the golf course or off the basketball or football or baseball court there. That was it that started. So when IMG started, they began, you know, referencing, you know, looking at the athletes and how to market them. And then soon after that, it spread like wildfire across, you know, all the teams, all the leagues. Many great sports marketing agencies, you know, CAA and Octagon, and just wonderful, wonderful, you know, services to help monetize the game. and make it more popular. A lot of people talk about the money in it, but it also broadened the audience and the appeal. So a lot of what we enjoy today at Super Bowls and these big events would not have been possible without the early sports marketers that made it more than a game on the field. They made it commercially acceptable and easy to find. And now there's ESPN and things like that that didn't exist back then. So usually if you wanted to watch a football game, you had a 3-hour window in the afternoon on Sunday. And besides that, you're not seeing any kind of football now. You can literally see football commentating and highlights and stuff 24 hours a day. And that's all because of, the value of the audience that they created.
All right. I dreamt last night that in your next life, you are the agent for two kids, brothers, Peyton Manning and Eli Manning. They're everywhere. Charlie, they're everywhere. That's aw shucks. How do you explain that?
Well, they embody everything. They embody, everything that people find valuable. Winners on the field, great relationships with their parents, brothers that get along, they stay out of trouble, they don't take themselves too serious. So you have to, it's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. And those, Peyton and Eli are very confident, but they're not arrogant. They have fun. It's just a game. They really do appeal in a very wholesome and wonderful way. And they happen to be, quite funny and entertaining along the way. So and I think what they've done with the Manning cast on Monday Night Football, where you can watch the great broadcast, with very professional broadcasters, or you can have a choice to go watch the Manning broadcast with Peyton and Eli and feel like you're in your den just with some buddies watching the game. And I go back and forth. I like them both. I think they're both very valuable. And sometimes, Peyton and Eli can be very, very entertaining when the game is not, So I think they bring an entertainment value that's outstanding. I'm a big fan of the Mannings.
Okay, we're talking to Charlie Toronto. In 2012, he meets a man named Keir Walton. And Keir convinces him, come on with me, join Heritage Works as our executive director. Talk about Heritage Works.
So it was a very chance meeting. I was in New York with Michael Strahan, and I was doing an interview with Michael on stage at the Chief Marketing Officers Convention. Afterwards, people were coming up for Michael's autograph. Keir walks up. I'm thinking he wants a picture and autograph. He goes, no, actually, someone said that we should meet. So it'd been a long day, Jack. So I'm like, if we're going to meet, we've got to eat. So I said, let's go grab a bite to eat. Tell me what you're doing. I'm hungry and I'm listening. So he's telling me about his archival business where they take film, audio, documents from the basements of these corporations and they protect them, preserve them, digitize them, and make them accessible back to the company. So all I can think is, well, I only know one thing, that's sports. So in just a comment in between courses, the salad's gone and here comes the hamburger. And I'm like, have you ever worked with sports teams? Well, just barely, but not so many. So I said, well, you know what, as a favor, I don't want anything. As a favor, I'll introduce you to a couple teams, because the great thing about sports is they're so arrogant that they'll tell you right away without hesitation if it's a bad idea. And then we can go our separate ways. So in my heart, I'm thinking, maybe this is a good idea. Well, we're going to find out. So we went to the Los Angeles Dodgers, and we told them what we did. And they're like, we've been waiting 20 years for a company like yours. Then we went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mr. Rooney was the same way. Then the Golden State Warriors. And now we work with probably 30 or 40 pro sports teams. And it's been 10, hundreds of clients. We have archival facilities outside of Atlanta that if you stack all of the physical documents end to end, would stretch 30 miles. Over 150 million artifacts and about 1 billion digital artifacts. Where we've grown to quite a large company. We do really good work. We love our clients. And we feel like we're, it's a noble cause, what we do, protecting and preserving the inspiration, the history of those that have come before us.
We're talking to Charlie Toronto. Charlie, when we come back, we're going to ask you, do you do anything with Detroit sports teams? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJI.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisullo.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
"My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan."
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Crisullo. This is Anything is Possible. We're talking to Charlie Toronto. And since 2012, he's been executive director of Heritage Works. Charlie, what do you do for us in Detroit?
Well, that's a great question, Jack. And Detroit is one of our favorite cities. We work with the Detroit Lions. We're thrilled with their success. They have an absolutely beautiful archive and a beautiful history. We also are fortunate to work with Illich Holding, which is Little Caesars, but you also know them as the Detroit Red Wings, Fox Theater, and the Detroit Tigers. So fortunately, we work with a gentleman there by the name of Marcel Parent, who actually, Jack, is how you and I met.
Yes.
Through an introduction.
Yes.
From Marcel. Marcel's a curator for Illich. He came from the Muhammad Ali archives and museum. Wonderful gentleman, one of our favorite people, and he actually was nice enough to make the introduction between you and I. So we love working for our clients in Detroit. We contend that Detroit and Michiganders in general are the friendliest people we get to work with of all of them around the country.
I agree. And it's been an honor to meet you. Okay. Virtual museums. COVID killed hundreds of museums because they were closed down, couldn't make any money, nobody was coming to look, a lot of overhead, they shut down. So there's this concept called virtual museums. Tell us about that, Jim.
Yes. So yeah, there are virtual museums now where we can take curated items, tell stories, put them on the internet, and have clients, you know, sign in and see the history of the Florida Panthers or, any one of the teams, as they can be forward-facing to the public or internal-facing, like at Hewlett-Packard, to their employee base. But the wonderful thing about them, I don't think they'll ever replace a live museum. It's a great experience to go through and see artifacts, you know, live, so to speak. But they certainly are convenient. So where a museum may be open from 9 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, if you wanted to see a virtual museum, it would be available to you 24/7. No parking, no tickets. You know, you can go in for 20 minutes and come back later after dinner, whatever. So being able to get educated on your favorite subjects, your themes, virtually is an option. I think it's a complimentary option to a live museum. And we're thrilled that technology has allowed us to tell stories. And that's one of the main purposes at Heritage Works, is to be a great storyteller. And to never forget those people, the moments, the milestones that came before us, so that we honor those contributors to the history of whatever subject, you know, you're interested in.
Charlie, the stuff you and your team see every day, it's unbelievable. If you could kind of highlight just a couple items, assets, what would you highlight?
Well, there's many confidence assets, because we respect our clients not wanting to share things. But we have seen, many, firsts in sports, uniform from the oldest players you can imagine, World Series rings, so many great things, player contracts. We saw a scouting report for Jackie Robinson that was not very complimentary. So it was, if you put it in historical context, to imagine Jackie went through the color barrier and the faith that Branch Rickey had in bringing him in, knowing that he would be a success. We get to see letters, correspondence, film, audio, video of the greatest moments in pro sports, but then also corporately through some of the biggest and most well-respected names you've ever heard, like, John Deere tractors or motorcycles, Levi's, 7-Eleven, et cetera, that tell the history of those companies, MetLife, and that have gone just changed the face of, American commerce and sports. Much of it comes through our facilities in Atlanta.
www.heritageworks.com. All right. In the late 80s, 90s, there was a man in Dallas by the name of Zig Ziglar, the greatest motivational speaker of our lifetime. And he wrote the book, See You at the Top. 41 times in that book, Charlie, he says, you can get everything in life you want if you help enough other people get what they want. And Charlie, that's how you live. You talked in the first segment about doing favors for people. All right? So one of your friends is a guy named Mike Piazza.
Yeah.
Arguably the greatest draft pick in baseball history. Talk about that, how that came to be.
Well, I was fortunate to sit with Mike at a table for the National Italian American Foundation, and we set it off. He was being honored, I'm sure, and we were just talking. His dad's there, and we were just having a great conversation, and asked where I live. I was in California at the time. He goes, well, I'm in Miami. I'm like, well, I'm about to move to Miami. He goes, when you come to Miami, let's get together and have a lunch and get to know each other. So we did that, and over the years have become very good friends. Besides being a wonderful baseball player, he's a wonderful son to his mom and dad. His dad has passed, but he's a wonderful son, a great parent. His daughter's now at the University of Notre Dame as a freshman, a great husband, a real inspiration, someone that really, reignited my faith, my Catholic faith, toward the church again. He's a really great friend. As famous as he may be, he's never lost his humility. He embraces his Italian-American heritage, as do I. So we have a lot of things in common, and our families are friends. And when we vacation in Italy, we visit them. And certainly when we're back in the United States, it's always a little time. So Mike's a Hall of Fame player, probably a more Hall of Fame human being.
All right. The year he was drafted in the 62nd round. The 1,390th player drafted out of 1,395. And how did it come to be that the Dodgers drafted this nobody?
Well, the rumor, which is mainly true, is that the Piazza family and the Lasorda family were close friends. Mr. Piazza and Tommy were friends. They came from the same area near Philadelphia, Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, and so it was somewhat of a favor, but not that much of a favor. Mike was not great. He was a very solid baseball player out of Miami-Dade, and so they drafted Mike. But when they drafted Mike, Mike was a first baseman. Like when Mike hit the big leagues, he's playing first base. You have to be catcher. So he went to Mexico for a couple of years, learned to catch, even though that was not a natural position. And when he got his shot at the majors, he made the most of it. Finally, getting to spring training a couple of years later. And, started hitting the ball over the fence. And so he had really a talent that you can't teach, which is power, focus, and the ability to be clutch. And certainly had 5 years in the Dodger organization before going to the New York Mets. And a 17-year career, hit more homers than any catcher in Major League Baseball history. Some very iconic moments, the home run that he hit after 9/11 that really brought the country back to feeling good about themselves in New York. So he's a remarkable human being, much more so than a baseball player, and he's a remarkable baseball player. Very, very honored to have him as a friend.
All right, another friend and mentor. Listen to this guy's resume. He was the general manager of the Dream Team in the 92 Olympics. He started the Chicago Bulls. He started the Phoenix Suns. He started the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Jerry Colangelo. Talk about him.
The great Jerry Colangelo. Yes, we became friends again through the National Italian American Foundation, where he was the chairman. And he had, he said, boy, we always throw these fundraisers in New York and D.C., but never a place like Texas. And he was looking at me. I'm like, Mr. Colangelo, it'd be my honor to try to throw a gala and raise some money for the foundation in Dallas. And we did that with the help of Joe DePinto, president of and CEO of 7-Eleven, Jay Lombardo, Mike Madonna, the hockey player, who's from the Detroit area. And so we threw a great gala, raised some money, and became friends in the process. And that's what sometimes you find. If you do something for some for a reason or a favor, you will develop a great friendship during the process. And to this day, you know, Jerry's words of integrity and how to treat people really, you know, live with me every single day in every business meeting, every deal that I do. You know, his wisdom is something that has guided my career. And I'm so appreciative of Jerry Colangelo. He's so well respected and really honored to even mention him as a mentor friend. And I probably stay in touch. We probably will text a few times a year just to see how he's doing. But he's an absolute legend and just a gem of a human being.
Well, so many people admire you, Charlie. And it's been an honor to meet you. And I thank you for you and your team helping me to turn this collection that I have, you know, into a virtual museum. It's been a great, great journey and continues.
Well, you're just remarkable in your own right. And I truly value our friendship and the hospitality that you all show me when I come to Michigan. And I look forward to crossing paths again soon.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoh. Believe it.